Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld. This program is about the evolution of consciousness and who we are becoming as evolving spiritual beings. And this is why I'm talking to tonight's guest, who's done a lot of work in that area. She's a mystic, a psychic, an intuitive, and she's also very much involved in ET UFO world investigations and along those lines. She also is the host of Shattered Reality Podcasts along with her co-host. But let's talk to Ferrucia. Ferrucia, you're there, right?
Yes, I'm here, Alan, and it's wonderful to hear your voice this evening.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, we have a nice little history. We traveled to Domenhor together with a bunch of other people. That was quite exciting and awakening, wasn't it?
Yes, I have to thank you for putting that trip together. We spent a week in northern Italy in this fabulous commune that mixed magic, real magic with a K, time travel, arts of all sorts, and we were so lucky to have met Falco before his passing.
Yes, we were. You're right. Yes, we were very lucky to meet the founder of Domenhor, Falco. Yes,
Alberti Iori, my Italian isn't splendid, but that was his original name, I believe. And he was a visionary, cutting out those limestone mountains and creating a modern wonder of the world, really, literally, one of the eight modern wonders of the world, I'd have to put it out as.
It was really a beautiful trip. Me and you and about, there were about 10 of us that went there on that trip, right?
Yeah, I think there were 10 of us and about three or four English people that weren't that came into our trip, and
they were
lovely as well. And a young Swiss man and his mother. And we just had a wonderful time there. And I do remember that the evening dinners were splendid with homemade pasta, and the people were very warm and interesting. And some of the things that were going on there in the arts and in ritual and their time travel thoughts were truly amazing, weren't they?
They were incredible. It was a great trip. And, of course, you can't go wrong eating real Italian food from real Italians, right?
Yes, yes. And we made a trip the last day, I believe, or the second to last day to a large town in northern Italy.
Oh, Torino, Turin.
Torino.
Yes, where the Shroud of Turin is. Actually.
And we saw all those Egyptian sculptures they had there, giant cat gods and goddesses.
It shows you this real mysticism is still alive around the world, because they did have a magic there in Domenhor particularly, right? Didn't you think so?
Oh, I definitely agree, and I found it to be one of the most awe-inspiring trips I've taken, and I've traveled much around the world. I've traveled all throughout the Middle East and a little bit to the Far East and throughout Europe, and some in Africa and South America. And I really found that to be an awe-inspiring trip. One of the things that I try to do to get connected with the energies of the earth by traveling to places where people have built mega structures sometimes, the giant stone sculptures of the British Isles and Ireland and in Normandy and Brittany in Europe, gone to Egypt and the pyramids, gone into some of the wonderful Greek antiquities, such as the beehive tomb of King Menelaus on one of the Greek islands.
Wow, that sounds great.
Yeah, it was It's really, you get a lot of energy from these places, even from the Great Wall of China. What I mean by even the Great Wall of China, the Great Wall of China was built as a kind of military endeavor to keep the hordes out from the towns in China. And yet it has such history that it vibrates with this incredible history.
Wow. That's great. That's great. But let's talk tonight. I mean, it's great we can go all around the world, but I want to talk about the off-world situations.
All righty.
And the abduction. I think you've talked about some of your experiences. And also, I want to tell you, I'm reading a book called Healing Shattered Reality. Do you know that book? Because your podcast is called Shattered Reality.
Yes, I know, but I do not know that book, and I'm going to have to look at it and to find it, because it seems very synchronistic that you should mention this, and that there is a book of that name, of which Kate Valentine, my co-host, and myself had no idea that there was any book of that nature. We found, when we were looking the name up, we decided upon the name, we found that there were a couple of rock groups in different parts of the country, or modern, I don't know that they play rock, but they're, you know, some form of modern music groups out there in other states, and that they were using the name Shattered Reality, but it was something entirely different, a musical group. So it wasn't like there was another podcast called Shattered Reality. But now
it's a book about the trauma of abductees. It's a really a great book that lays out what happens when you're, you have a kind of negative abduction experience,
right,
and the kind of psychological situations that come about because of these unfriendly aliens. So I thought when I saw the name of your show, maybe it had something to do with that, but I guess it didn't.
No, it doesn't have anything to do with that particular book, though one of our recent guests was a woman named Lizette Larkins, and she has a long history of being an experiencer. Had she been abducted? Yes, but it wasn't for her after the initial abductions or contact experiences. It wasn't traumatic because she began to have actual conversations with the others, which brings us to a big question involving this field. Where are the others from?
Yes, where are the others from? Why are they here? What do they want? I mean, I have some idea of why they're here, but tell me where you think they're from.
I have to say that I don't have a dog in that race. I do think that they are interacting with humanity. I believe that these others may not all be the same others, right? I mean, there's no telling that it couldn't be some interdimensional beings on one hand, and then some visitors from Zeta Reticuli or Alpha Centauri on the other hand. There could be more than one kind of visitor, and there could be aliens out there in the far reaches of the galaxy and in other galaxies that haven't actually made it here yet. And when we look at little creatures like tardigrades, do you know what tardigrades are, Alan?
No, I've never heard of that term. What is that?
Tardigrades almost look like weird teddy bears without eyes.
Are they ETs? Are they ETs?
They might be. But let me explain.
Yes.
They are little biological things that are like very, very tiny little animals of the smallest sort. And they purportedly can withstand the rigors of being in space. And then you have people who are cosmologists who believe that some viruses and things similar to tardigrades, or perhaps tardigrades themselves, may come in on comets. They may be dispersed throughout the universe and certainly throughout our galaxy by the comets, by the meteors, by the messengers from the outer portions of the galaxy. And certainly the outer portions of the solar system, like from the Kuiper belt and the Oort cloud, which is out beyond the planets, but still.
Well, how do you spell tardigrades? How do you spell that?
T-A-R-D-I-G-R-A-D-E, I think. But they are little microscopic things. Now, you recall that recently on the International Space Station, there was some form of barnacles or lichen found on the, I think it was barnacles that was found on the International Space Station. Most of that equipment up there is launched from Central Asia, one of the stands, I believe, that the Russians launch most of the equipment that is on the space station comes from a place not anywhere near a big ocean or a sea, but kind of on the steppes of Asia. So we have to ask ourselves, where did those barnacles come from? Are they existing on some level high up in the atmosphere? Do we know this? We don't. We just don't have the answers to many of these things.
Was that reported by NASA about the barnacles? Where did you read that? That's interesting.
It's unfortunate, but I don't have the backup on these things at my fingertips, but I can certainly get it to you.
I am looking up tardigrades, right, grades right now, and they are these little microscopic animals that seem like they could exist interstellar-like and travel, you know?
And you recall Terrence McKenna.
I love Terrence McKenna. He's one of my favorites.
Mine too. And he had a theory, and I'm probably going to mess it up a little bit, but that spores, like mushroom-type spores, could travel interstellar distances and maybe bring life from one planet or solar system to the next. And of course, there was in his theory the whole part involving being a psychonaut, you know, having taking some of these substances that would change your consciousness. Yeah. But I guess that's for another night.
No, that's okay. We can talk about that too. But I also want to know, though, and you brought it up when you mentioned Lisette, and also want to hear about your experiences, the difference between contactee, abductee, experiencer. I mean, of course, they're just terms, but people say that, or I've read places, people go from the trauma of abduction to this conscious awareness, like you talked about Lisette. I want to know, how do you make that transition from being a victim of ET abductions to one where you're in control of the or equal to these ETs? Do you know what I mean?
I don't know whether we ever get to be equal in this situation, but what I do know is that it may take some people relax about it sooner than others. There is a real terror that's involved when you lose control of your body, mm-hmm. And you are either being abducted or you are being paralyzed, and the being is speaking to you or contacting you in some way. But I'd like to go back one level,
yes,
and talk,
yes,
about the idea of the contactee, the abductee, and the experiencer.
Yes, that's something I really want to understand from your perspective. Yes, please.
I believe that currently the most popular term is experiencer, and this is because it runs the gamut of things. It doesn't have a value judgment added, because an abductee kind of has a negative connotation, whereas a contactee, if you go back to the people in the 50s who were contactees, it was all about Space Brothers and protecting the planet, hey, that's all good as far as I'm concerned. But then a lot of people started having some bad experiences, and we got into the abductee sort of situation. Now, I never want to disparage another person's experience, though the largely much of the UFO world, not me, but much of the UFO world disparaged many of the contactees after the 50s and the early 60s were over. Kind of nuts and bolts people who believe beyond the shadow of a doubt that all UFOs and UAPs, unidentified aerial phenomena, that they are nuts and bolts craft and they come from Zeta Reticuli, okay? Or I'm just picking out a star. I'm sorry.
Right. No, I know what you mean. Yes.
And so the nuts and bolts characters that were very popular, let's say, in the 70s and into the 80s, they disparaged the contactees as being a kind of, shall we say, daft, you know, a little bit off their rockers and looking for a kind of adulation or being recognized for contacting aliens. Now, So you have the abductees, which is the kind of pejorative term in the sense, and I mean not pejorative, but negative, the abductees go through difficulties, they're taken against their will, possibly aboard a spaceship, and where strange things happen to them and experiments are performed on them, and they go through this night after night or day after day, depending on who they are, and this happens to them, they can't stop it, it's just... It's a nightmare, and it causes psychological problems in the person.
Yes, I think actually I'm an abductee. I think I've had those experiences. I have to admit right here on the radio. Yes.
Okay.
But I don't remember them. I just have a feeling about. I do have slight memories, but anyway, continue, and then we can discuss that. Yeah, please. Yes.
So you have those three categories, but experiencer is the bigger umbrella. It includes the contactees, it includes the abductees, and it can include experiences of allied phenomena.
Other things,
like, is a person who levitates an experiencer? Maybe.
Is that possible? I'm sure anything's possible, but why do you bring that up? Is that something...
It's the first thing that came to my mind of a kind of experience that a person can have, we don't know where the agent is. In other words, the person did not decide, let me see if I can levitate, but suddenly finds themselves rising up, let us say.
Right.
And that's very, very rare. We did have a gentleman on our podcast called Michael Grosso who spoke about St. Joseph of Cupertino, who was the levitating saint.
Oh, yeah. Yes. I want to interview Michael Grosso at some point.
Well, I'm sure he would love to be on with you, and I can certainly put you in touch with him. He's a very lovely gentleman. But that came off the top of my head as just another kind of experience one could have. Saying that experience would necessarily be thrown into the UFO basket, but who knows what agency levitated this St. Joseph of Cupertino. Now, he was a very devout man. I don't want to go totally into that story, but that was an experience, and it happened over and over again, so he was an experiencer on some level. But going back to the idea of having had experiences and being at first terrified and mortified by them and just praying that they will never happen again, and then realizing maybe months later or years later or maybe the next day for some of the more lucky people, not me, but some of the more lucky people might realize it sooner, that in the end, nothing bad happened. There are no lasting scars. There are no broken bones. And maybe there are some gifts that are given.
Yeah. Well, what do you want to talk? I mean, I think we had some similar experiences about being frozen, being pulled out the back of the neck. Do you want to talk about your experiences and I'll share mine too?
Sure. Where do you want to start?
Well, what was the earliest experience you remember?
It's very, very difficult to like slice it and dice it. I had a psychic experiences since I was a reasonably small child, and I've had visitor experiences since I was a very small child. I grew up in a family, a very small nuclear family, where my father was quite psychic, and my mother was intuitive, and she did, you know, they didn't disbelieve that anything like that could happen. The first thing, and this is a kind of a rule, if you want to become more psychic or you want to become more intuitive, you have to accept and believe within yourself that it's possible. Because if you think, oh, it's not possible, I could never be psychic, or I could never, you know, do such and such, even if it has nothing to do with it, if you figure you could never ride a bicycle, honey, you're not going to ride a bicycle, okay?
Right. So you was acceptable in your household, so there.
I was in the household there. I had psychic experiences. But the first sort of otherworldly sort of experiences I had were that I had some playmates when I was 2 and 3 and 4 years old. I was an only child, and I saw these mostly little metallic characters that would come and play with me. And I still remember some of their names. I'm not going to mention them on air, but okay. I still remember some of their names. And then there was one kind of larger creature who would come, and he was the sort of the ruler or the leader of these little guys who would come and play with me. And I think he would sort of come and round them up. Now, while
these weren't imaginary friends, these were real friends.
They were real to me, yeah. And they were somewhat real to my father.
Uh-huh.
Imaginary, you know, there's a very thin line is all I can say. But these guys were metallic. They were small. They were, they seemed to have personalities, but their bodies, one would say, almost like sort of robotic as being metallic. Whereas the larger creature was sort of amorphous and almost blobular, like kind of just a big creature that was, sort of not paunchy, but you know what I mean? Like almost like a creature that wasn't clearly defined compared to the little guys.
But did they communicate with you? Were there messages from? Oh, okay.
No messages of any import that I can remember. But they were companions to me, and then they got rounded up by the bigger guy, and they would go away, and they might come back the next day, or they might come back 4 days later, and this went on for a period of time, and I do believe that my father saw them too.
And you were what, 2 or 3 or 4, something
like
that?
Yeah, in that age range,
I
yes.
See. Okay, okay.
And then when I was about 7 or 8, I was sleeping in my tiny bedroom, which was off the kitchen of my two-family house that I lived in.
You grew up in New York, didn't you?
I grew up, at that time I was living in Union City, New Jersey.
Okay, okay.
And my father worked in the shipyard in Hoboken, and he would have to get up very early in the morning. But I was at the moment, I was in my room I had a folding door. The folding door was closed, and I was in terror because my body was being literally lifted off my bed. My shoulders and my head were still on the bed. The door was closed. Starting with my feet, was lifted up 3 feet in the air, and I was at an angle with my shoulders and head on the bed and the rest of my body up in the air. And my father flicked on the light in the kitchen, and I fell down onto the bed with a bang. Wow. He was quite unnerved. He yelled at me, "What the heck is going on in there?" And I said something. I don't remember what. I was, only 7 or 8 at the time. And that may have been part of an abduction. That was certainly a levitation. Not by me. I felt another presence in the room.
Oh, wow.
And from there, when I was about 12 years old, I saw a UFO with a large group of other people.
In New Jersey? Were you in New Jersey?
This was not near my home in Union City. This was in a place called Cozy Lake, New Jersey, which is, I think it's in northern Morris County, New Jersey. It's not too far away from the Picatinny Arsenal, which is an army depot.
It was a daylight.
No, it was an evening situation. Okay. I was coming home from the drive-in movies with a boy and his parents. I was his friend. They had taken the two of us out to a drive-in movie, and we were coming home to the lake community where we spent some of our summers. And as we were driving towards the bridge, which entered into the community, we saw a lot of people on the road. And some people waved for us to stop. So the man and the lady, the man was driving and he stopped. And we thought that there had been an accident. And I recall that the mother of the boy that I was with was very concerned that her older son could have been in an accident, because kids at that time, 17, 18, 19 years old, were driving around the area like nuts, maybe drinking a little bit. And
this was in the 60s. Are you talking about the 1960s, right?
Late 60s, the late 60s.
Okay.
And, they wrapped themselves around trees and stuff like that.
Right. But you pulled off the road with a bunch of other people who were already off the road looking at something?
Yes. So as I said, the mother was very agitated because we had thought that somebody had an accident, because there was so many people out there. There was a police car out there. We all piled out of the car, the four of us, and we found out that they were looking at a strange object in the sky. Now, this strange object had apparently moved into the sky at a great rate of speed and stopped on a dime, basically in the western sky, sort of, high up at about, 90 degrees up, but in the generally western sky. And it
right.
was a large light is what we saw.
What color light? Was it white?
It was white, or, maybe pretty white, not a bright color in any way.
Right.
It could have been white. It might have been like slightly off-white, but there it was amongst the stars. Now, had they not seen it come into the sky, it's possible that we wouldn't have noticed it, because just a bright light, might have taken it for another star or something. But it had come rushing into the sky, stopped on a dime, was bigger than any of the stars or the planets that might have been seen, and the sky was quite clear at that time, and then had sent out two smaller lights. These two,
like a little beam, like sent out a beam of light?
No, sent out sort of two separate, like a ship with two scout ships.
That's pretty amazing. Yes.
I'm using that expression, but I don't know that that's what it was, but that's
yes.
what I saw. So when I got to seeing it, I saw the bright light, and somebody pointed out to me the two smaller lights, one on each side of the other. And one of those smaller lights continued to go back and forth between the larger light, like was making a slow movement back and forth a number of times, while one just stayed stationary. All of a sudden, as we have been watching this for several minutes, 3 minutes, 5 minutes, 7 minutes. I don't recall. Both of these lights went back into the central light, and then it seemed to like quickly sort of get brighter or change color in some minor way and streaked out of the sky. If I would have blinked, I would have thought it disappeared. But
you
I did not saw this part yourself. Absolutely. I saw everything except the original light coming into the view and sending out the two lights. When I got there, the lights were already out to the side, the smaller lights, and one was going back and forth. And I watched this for a number of minutes. It wasn't seconds. It was minutes. How many minutes? Can't tell you. It was a long time ago. But it was a number of minutes. There were over 20 people there, including a patrol car with two policemen in it.
It was along the side of a highway that these people
It was along the side of a county road.
I see. It was a small county road.
It was a county road. It was paved. It was not a big, well-traveled road. In the summertime, people would go to lakes and go swimming. It was that kind of a road. There were a couple of farms on the road and a lot of what you would call like little developments of small houses, Levittown type of houses, but nothing that dense as in Levittown where it's a lot of buildings.
After the thing took off, what did everyone say? What did the police say? What did everyone, you know, what went on?
Well, what went on was that, you know, I was a little girl and I didn't get to talk to the police much, but the gentleman in the group, the men, the adult men, kind of talked to the policeman, and the policeman said, well, we're talking to, the army over at Picatinny to see if they know what's going on, and a few other things of that nature. And we put the report in, and other people, down the road or in another nearby community also saw this. So we'll be looking for some answers. Of course, nobody ever heard anything about it again.
Right.
And I was there with somebody else's parents, so it sort of is what it was. And there were a bunch of people standing on this little bridge that went over that separated sort of one lake area from another lake area there. And I was one of at least 20 people. Who saw
it? I never forgot it, which is pretty good.
No, I did not. And in the same time frame, I had another experience in the same area, in a wooded area where I would go hiking with my young friends. And there was a girls' camp that was about a half a mile from the lake community through the woods. And we would also go up a big hill that was called a mountain, but it's not a mountain like the Rockies. You know, it's a mountain like we have in New Jersey and New York State. And you go up the mountain and you would sit up on the top. And if you were really brave, you would climb down the rocks on the other side of the mountain and go swimming in another bigger lake, which was might have been slightly illegal, but it wasn't, you know, wasn't really illegal. It was frowned upon by adults.
Right.
But we would go do that, and we were walking in the woods where we had been before, where, generally speaking, it was not too far away from the girls' camp. It was a flat area, but there was a house there that we never saw before.
All of a sudden, there was a house? That's weird.
There was a house where we had never seen a house before. And we thought we maybe strayed off the path and we were in amongst the girls' camp, which there were some like cabins there. But as we got closer to the house, we saw that the house was like, it had curtains on it. It was nothing like the girls' camp, which was like these, you know, brown wooden bungalows that were lucky if they had windows in them, you know. And this was like a little house, and it had, it looked like it had been taken care of. But the puzzling thing about it was there was no road to the house. In other words, there was no way for anyone to get to and from the house on any road or sizable path. And I just looked at the other two kids and they looked at me and we took off so fast. What it may have been like a screen memory or something.
That's what I was thinking. You were thinking you saw a house, but you're really seeing a UFO that they planted, the ETs planted in your mind the idea of a house.
Right, because we all had the idea of the house like in Hansel and Gretel or like one of those little witch houses, you know? Yeah. It was like we had this cultural memory from fairy tales or something.
Right.
And that's the overlay that the three of us had. We discussed it briefly after we had run out of the woods. We took a good 10 minutes to get out from where we are, maybe a little longer, to run back onto the lake property and the little roads that were there. And we were like, did you see that? And, you know, we try to say, well, maybe it was from the girls' camp, but what were those curtains doing? Why wasn't that house ever there before? And, you know, it really kind of looked like the house from Hansel and Gretel, which doesn't belong in New Jersey there. And what did we see? And then we talked about it for maybe 10 minutes and the kids never brought it up again. It was just like almost like a taboo subject. I don't know why.
You could have actually had missing time. You could have actually, more could have happened there you might not remember.
It's possible.
Yeah. But did you ever have a full-on abduction, Kai?
Okay. After I saw these lights in the sky that everybody else saw, right. A few years later, I started to have lucid dreams. And these lucid dreams, they were very hyper-real dreams as opposed to, you know, normal dreams that you have every night. And in these dreams, there was a young man who would be chasing me. And at the time, although I knew something about UFOs, very little, but I knew something about UFOs, I had never heard about the Nordics. The big light blonde haired alien groups that other people were seeing. But this fellow kept chasing me and showing me stuff and chasing me and wanting to interact with me. And I was mortified. Then about 10 years later, I was laying in my bed in New York City, and more than once, another large Nordic person being came into my room. I was paralyzed and told me a number of things. I was in my 20s at that time. Wow. He told me a number of things. I was terrified, but I did not.
You were terrified because he just appeared out of nowhere? What was terrifying?
Yeah, and I was paralyzed, and he appeared out of nowhere, and he gave me a bunch of information, and I wanted nothing to do with this, Alan. I wanted nothing, nothing, nothing. So I closed down some of my interest in the paranormal as a result of that. It's like, you know, you don't want to open that door sometimes.
But what do you think is, so terrifying ultimately about, you know, these encounters? What terrified you?
I can't say. It's not an intellectual fear. It is a biological terror, if that makes any sense to you.
Yes.
It's not like I am afraid of the terrorists, that they're going to come and blow up my apartment. That's an intellectual fear. When you see the guy with the bomb standing in front of you, that becomes more of a physical fear. That becomes a physical terror, you know?
Yes, it's a body terror. Yeah.
You don't have a choice. You don't have a choice of this feeling. And I don't know if you know Chase Kletsky. She was a former MUFON investigator.
Sounds familiar. She's a
lovely woman. She lives in the south of the United States. And she would go out for MUFON and investigate UFO encounters. And she went to one investigation where, not to go into her entire experience, which I'm sure I wouldn't do justice to, but what she would do, what she did was she went to this place where there was an encounter, there were lights seen, there was some kind of a what seemed to be a craft. And then as they were migrating, the people migrating from the field to go back to the farmhouse, all of a sudden there was something there, a being. And the terror that they all felt was entirely biological. There were big cowboy guys there, you know, like big ranch hands, and the terror was palpable. It's like a dog feels terror when he's in the company of a lion or something.
That's an interesting perspective. Thank you for that. It's like biological, primal terror.
Yes, Alan. Yes, exactly. It's not what fear is like, oh, you know, your mother tells you don't go off with strangers because they'll kill you. And so you fear strangers for better or for worse.
Beyond fear. It's beyond thinking,
intellectual.
Beyond reason, huh?
Right. It has, you can decide even beforehand, well, the next time that one of these beings comes into my room by whatever means, I'm not going to be afraid and I'm going to say yada yada. But when it happens, you feel terror often.
But Daryl Anko channels Bashar talked about that. He said that's because they're vibrating at such a high, different rate that we don't know what to do with it. There's no way to connect with that. So it kind of, it feels like annihilation almost, you know.
To burn out your circuitry too, I would suspect, because there is an electrical sort of component. Lizette Larkins talks about it. I experienced it, where what happens to begin with is that my face begins to vibrate. Now, you said you felt like you were pulled out of the back of your head.
Yes. I mean, I was a sort of felt like I couldn't move. I heard this loud sound and it felt like this pulling. It was like energetic pulling out of the back of my neck. Have you heard of that?
Yes, I have. And there is no one place where this happens. In other words, to my knowledge, it doesn't always happen out of the back of your head. Some people have it happen out of their third eye, the chakra area between their eyes. With me, the vibrations almost always started under my nose, above my lip, right? Like where my nose meets my upper lip. Odd, right? That's kind of
a strange place. I mean,
but it vibrated, and really painful vibrations. The electricity was painful and would go through my body. It still happens on occasion, not as frequently as it did at that juncture. And I would be paralyzed, and then something would happen to me, whether it would be this a Nordic type alien. And the funny thing is that I never found out that there were Nordic type aliens until after it happened to me. And I think I read Ingo Swann's, confrontation with the Nordic aliens. And it almost knocked me off my seat. Somebody else had seen the same thing I had. I thought I might be losing my mind.
But were you ever found? Did you ever find yourself aboard a ship?
I found myself in strange places. I never found myself in a place that I could identify as definitively being in a spaceship in space. No, I never found that, honestly. But I did find myself in places that I was brought to after I felt like I was pulled out of body, and things were shown to me. Some of the things were future events. But one thing that has helped me in dealing with this experience is I am a professional division member of the Monroe Institute. And there I learned a lot about running energy. Like sometimes when the energy comes in, you can run it up and down your body and you can control it a little bit in that circumstance at the Monroe Institute. That's one good side, right, that, you know, how I've learned to help to control it, if you will.
Right. So you had sort of out of body type experiences. What? And you went to different places, you said? You were brought to different locations?
Sometimes I was brought to different locations. One time there was something fairly typical of the abduction experience, and that was there was a small woman who sort of gave the appearance of being an Asian woman, but it was kind of like misty. I mean, I couldn't really describe her features entirely. And she was bringing a large group of sort of pathetic looking children through a room that I was in with some other women. It seemed almost like a school. And one of these children clammed onto me, you know, just clambered onto me and would not let go of me.
Really? That must have freaked you out, right?
Yes. And that's kind of sort of something very typical of the abduction experience. But the woman got the child off of me. I was not mean to the child. I was trying
to be. Was it a child or a little ET that clammed onto you?
Yeah, well, that's a very good question. I think that I can't answer that question. I will never tell you. I know something I don't know, and I don't know what it was. It gave the impression of being under the care of these females that were sort of herding a group of them, and they were all dressed alike in some light colored garb. And this one particular one, grabbed onto me like a sort of just, in a bear hug around my lower waist and my legs. And it shocked me. And I think that most abductees would say that this was, a child that was theirs from an abduction. I have no idea. I don't give it that meaning, but it could be. But I don't know that it was. But I did have that experience that was kind of akin to other quote.
That's pretty traumatic. That's a trauma, actually, what you experienced there.
But that was a longer abduction, because many things happened during that abduction, including getting the names of future clients that hadn't really up yet.
That's interesting.
Yeah, giving me the names of future clients. I was also in a room that had exhibits in it, like almost like a museum or like a glassed-in exhibits. And there were things from Samaria and Egypt. And I remembered very clearly. And then years and years later, I was in that room in 3D. In this reality.
So it was kind of a positive experience, some of these moments, was it?
Yes, it was interesting. It was precognitive. Why the heck it happened, I'll never know. Or I don't know at this time. Maybe I will know in some future moment.
What do you make of the whole thing? These coming, they're taking people, maybe thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of people around the world. I mean, what do you make of the whole situation about abductions and whatever you want to call it?
Well, it being an experience, what do I make of it? I look at it in different ways. I look towards the probability from the varieties of experiences that people have had that not everybody is lying.
Right.
So we're not just making it up. I also look at the naysayers that say all of this is just sleep paralysis. I say to those people, well, yes, there is a biological process that is happens to all higher order mammals, dogs and cats and horses and so forth, and I guess great apes and monkeys as well, is that when you go to sleep, there's a certain part of your sleep where you become paralyzed so that you don't act out your dreams. But if you were a much higher order being, okay, if you were not a human being, but a much higher order being in the universe, and you wanted to investigate human beings, how, Alan, would you do it? Would you be smart and say, look at these higher order beings. They have this thing that goes on during the night called sleep paralysis, when these angry apes with guns can't move because they're paralyzed due to the fact that they're in a state of sleep paralysis. If we can induce this sleep paralysis state on these human beings and maybe other animals, we can have them do what we want. We can control
and take our
them.
Genetics, of course. I think there's a genetic component to that all this.
That may very well be. Now, but, yes. Go ahead.
I was just wondering. No. Tell me what you're going to say.
I was going to say that, clearly, what are these beings? I would say there may be more than one thing. Are they interplanetary, interstellar? Could be. Are some of these crafts nuts and bolts? Probably. These beings that come and abduct us, are they maybe a higher level of being that could be here a lot of the time that we don't see, that could be sitting next to you right now, or, being next to you, sitting is a sort of human activity, but
right.
Could be being next to you right now, listening to this whole interview. We might not be able to see them, but that doesn't mean they don't exist. It doesn't mean there isn't an interdimensional sort of portal. Now, these things can be both interstellar and interdimensional at the same time.
Yes, I totally agree. But let's say they are real. This is happening, and I think they are, and I think it is. What do you think they're here for, at least among the beings that you met and encountered? What would you say they want with us? I mean, no one knows. It's just a guess, but what do you think?
I would say that the beings, the tall, blonde, Nordic beings that I had interaction with, were not harmful to me. They seemed to be benign, perhaps curious. The one back when I was in my 20s, he did warn of ecological problems, which do exist. And I would bring into this a gentleman who we recently had on Shattered Reality named Robert Hastings, who has researched how UFOs have come to American and Russian military bases where intercontinental ballistic missiles are stored. The nuclear missiles.
Yes, I've seen video. It's great that you had him on.
He's wonderful researcher.
He's a very respectable person. Totally. Mainstream in a way too,
He's a really sober guy. He's very serious about what he's doing. He's no nonsense. And the people he only interviews, men and women, I assume, though it's mostly men, who have worked with these ICBMs in these missile silos, guarding outside, these military people who are thoroughly vetted for psychological problems by the government, and not, they don't just send any G.I. Joe who was an alcoholic from Paterson, New Jersey, to guard the missile silos, generally speaking. They're people who are very, very well vetted. And please, no alcoholics from Paterson. I do not mean anything against you guys.
That's funny. But we're almost out of time, but I just want to ask you about then, what does the future look like? I mean, I know you're a mystic, a psychic. I mean, the future of UFOs, ETs, disclosure, really. What does that, and people like Robert Hastings, what do they say about this whole next phase?
Well, you know, you've got the Steve Bassetts and the and the Stephen Greers who think that that disclosure is right around the corner. And then you've got people like Robert Hastings, who seems to be fairly credible and says that they don't really have any reason to disclose, that it would only cause a disruption. They would have to admit that they've been hiding it for all this time. And unless the ETs themselves want to disclose themselves, which they're perfectly able to do if they want to, that the governments just have no reason to do it. And then you have somebody like Colonel John B. Alexander, PhD, who is also our guest, who wrote a book about UFOs from the military side of it, having been in the military for a number of years, and after that, having worked at
He say, John? I don't completely trust them to tell you the truth, but what is
actually? I've met him a couple times, and he seems, you know, he is who he is. I mean, I'm sure he's got secrets. You know, if you have top security clearance, you got secrets, right? One goes with the other. Right. But he seems to be really somebody who's looked into the phenomena. He says that there already is disclosure on a certain kind of slide into it way, like they do admit certain things, and that nobody really knows what's going on.
Well, who admits? I mean, the government never admitted anything.
Well, you know, I like to tell you differently, in the sense that they've released certain reports, and I tell you, you should read his book. He's quite an adventurer. He is interested in all kinds of phenomenology. He's right now involved in shamanistic work. He's 80 some odd years old, 81 or 82, and he's out there swimming with the sharks last week.
Wow.
He had sent out pictures on Facebook. He's down there in a shark tank. Right. I wasn't doing that at 25. The man's 82. Right. He's out in the shark tank. He's a hell's angel as far as I'm concerned.
Farouche, thank you. I mean, we have to kind of, I only have about an hour here. So how can people reach you? When is your podcast on? And give me some of that.
Okay. The podcast is Shattered Reality Podcast with Farouche and Kate Valentine. It's on 24/7 on demand. It's at shatteredrealitypodcast.com and shatteredrealitypodcast.wordpress.com. We've got a whole bunch of them up on YouTube. They're not all up on YouTube yet. I do psychic readings in New York City, and I also do creative visualization.
How can people find you for psychic readings?
Farouche.com, FARUSHA.com. I'm also looking for experiencers who want to relate their experience on our podcast, as you may be looking for too. But
I'll relate my experiences if you want.
I would love you to. I would love you to. We have to speak off the air and straighten that out. I would love to have you on.
Okay, I will Skype you after this program. Let me just say goodbye. This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. I've been talking to an experiencer, Farouche, and we're going to be doing more experiences. So thanks for listening. Go to my website, newrealities.com, and have a good night.